Recording.
This meeting is being recorded.
Oh.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Do we do the Pledge of Allegiance, I guess?
I do have a flag. Let's see.
I can see a flag all rolled up here, but.
Oh,
here it comes. There you go.
Thank you.
Nobody else is asking to come in, Sharon, so.
Okay, someone just called.
Yeah, someone just called.
Did you bring up a flag or not?
Yes. Oh, is it not?
I can't see it.
I don't see it.
I'm sorry, it's paused. I apologize. Oh, shoot. Here.
Bill was having some computer issues. He'll be on in just a moment.
Sorry, you guys. There she is.
All right.
I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America
and to the Republic
for which it stands, one nation
under God,
with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Good ball.
Kathy, can you do roll call?
Yes. Oh. Sharon Tobias?
Here.
Andy Rich?
Here.
Bill Cover? I saw him log on. Dan Crosby?
Here.
John Dashner?
Here.
Bruce Utter?
Here.
And Jeff Jones.
Here.
And joining us is our LRPC chair, Tom Snyder. Our AOM Lee Schmeeds, general manager, Tyler Mayo, legal counsel, Andrew Ramos, and myself, Kathy Powell, the accounts manager.
I'm here, Kathy. I had computer trouble, so.
Thank you. You guys can see the board packet, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
All righty.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here this morning.
Good morning.
I think we'd like to move public comment to when there's a member of the public. If they join us, we'll move it at that point. That's not very eloquent. The caffeine is not kicking in. So the first item will be the consent calendar. Did anyone have any questions or comments on the consent calendar?
Could we move that we accept them?
Sure, I hear a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you very much. Do we need a vote? No, we just second and we move on. Okay, thank you, Lee. I'm rusty, you know? In another year or two, I'll go. Okay, so the next item are the committee reports.
All righty.
All right, Tyler.
Okay, so over the last couple of months, we finally received the CL-17s and the controller. Soon after receiving them, Billy and I wired them in, plumbed them in, got everything up and running. And later in the month, we had Hawk the owners of the brand name of the CL17s. They came out and did the startup and calibration on the CL17s. And then we had to have Aqua Sierra controls come out to set the 4 to 20 milliamp on the CL17s so we could read what was happening from the CL17s on our SCADA and our computer. We also had Aqua Sierra controls come out because we have a pressure switch down at the wells, power 2 and 3 building that went out. Upon diagnosing the pressure switch, they found that the pressure controller and the pressure switch were out. So then they needed to return and order a pressure controller so it will control the switch. And they're supposed to be back fairly soon to do that. They haven't given me an exact date yet just because of the supply chain with electronics especially. We also had with our SCADA system, we were having intermittent radio loss. So we also had Aqua Sierra troubleshoot what was going on with that. And it happened to be one of the control boards out at the wells was burnt out. We replaced it with a spare one and sent off the old one to be repaired. That usually happens according to Aqua Sierra when the power goes out, when that sensitive equipment gets a power outage, it tends to fry something. So,
Tyler.
And lastly, we hired a new employee on March 3rd. We hired our new assistant water master, Ronnie Nicholas. He has a background in construction and counseling, which I think will work out well here. In his first 6 months, he's expected to complete his 36-hour online courses, which are required for him to be able to take the state exam and get his distribution or treatment license. And pretty much during the short time that he's been with us, he's shown a great interest in the water industry. He listens well, and he's picking things up quickly.
So, Tyler, this is Dan Crosby.
Yep.
So what, refresh my memory and maybe other people's memory, what's a CL17?
CL17 was something I put in, I believe it was the December special meeting. It analyzes the chlorine at the treatment plant. We had the computer in one go out. The other one was already completely failed. When I called Hawk, they were obsolete, so we had to order new CL17s and a controller. I had put in for that in December. The board approved it, and it took up until about February for all of the product to show up.
Okay, so it's a chlorine monitor.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tyler. Mm-hmm. All right, Tom.
I think we need to move to about page 16 or so. Yeah, there we go. So first topic is one that we've discussed two or three times now. It's a reorganization of the Long Range Planning Committee, getting to a point where I can step down as the chair. At the January 8th board meeting, we reviewed a breakdown of the Long Range Planning Committee task descriptions and some initial recommendations that were made for task leads. And task leads were at that point were tentatively approved for three of the task descriptions. And we'll look at those task descriptions again in a minute. And based on that discussion that went on, it was agreed that the Long Range Committee would meet one additional time to discuss the overall plan again and finalize recommendations for the remaining task descriptions and potential leads. So the Long Range Planning Committee met on February 1st, and that meeting resulted in a couple additional task lead volunteers, which you'll see in a minute, as well as recommendations on how some of the tasks could possibly be combined and potential leads identified for the board to consider today. So the following chart, if we go to that, reviews the discussions and changes that were recommended during that meeting. So on the first task up there, this was already approved at the board meeting in January. It's providing the Long Range Planning Committee bubbler input. So that is going to be handled by the staff. I don't know if a staff member has been assigned to that task yet or not, but so we'll need to know, I guess, who's going to be doing that. So task two and three were still kind of up in the air at the time. That was a couple of kind of summary level tasks that I've been doing. That's compiling and presenting the Long Range Planning Committee status updates to the board at the board meetings, and actually leading or holding the Long Range Planning Committee meetings and kind of chairing those as they were held. And so at the Long Range Committee meeting that we had on February 1st, the staff, Tyler and Lee, recommended to the Long Range Planning Committee that Kathy Pell be assigned to these two tasks. And so we're bringing that forward to the board for discussion and or approval or concurrence. So those two tasks are open based on to discussion based on that recommendation. Any comments either way?
So we did not actually make a decision to put Kathy in these positions, just a recommendation at this point?
Yeah, I think it was prudent to bring it back to the board and make sure everybody feels comfortable with that.
So why wouldn't the chair of the committee, make the presentations, number three?
The chair would. So basically what they're recommending is that Kathy be the chair.
Well, is that realistic?
Tyler and Lee, you guys brought up that recommendation, and Kathy, you can speak up too, as far as it being realistic. I guess with Kathy's other assignments and workload, is that doable?
Kathy had basically volunteered for it and said she could take on those tasks. Lee and I agreed that she could be able to basically organize the meeting and report back to the board of directors. Between the bubbler and the water meter usage study, that's kind of all staff involved. So it really would only be on Kathy for those two and three.
So from a practical standpoint, I'm going to address Andrew with this question. Should the chair of the Long Range Planning Committee be a board member as opposed to a member of the management organization?
Andy, I think that's really a policy question for the board. I mean, the LRPC is a creation of the board. So as Tom said earlier, this is really sort of an appointment for the board to make. Could be staff. Could be a board member, could be a shareholder. It's really a policy question about use of resources and your vision for what the LRPC is going to be going forward.
It was my understanding that I would be facilitating the meetings whenever the LRPC has it and taking notes. And then I would just present to the board what LRPC had come up with at those meetings.
So not really the chair, or is that the chair? I mean, facilitating a meeting and reporting back is not necessarily a chair.
So, Sharon, what do you want the LRPC to be?
That's a good question. You know, maybe it's time that we consider, you know, just instead of one overall thing, we have different committees and the lead of each committee reports. So like if I could see Kathy being the one who comes back to the board and presents things with support from another board member or shareholder who's on the LRPC. I think that's kind of my concern, is that, you know, no matter who it is, I want the backing from the LRPC that of what this person's saying. So it doesn't necessarily need it. I don't rule out someone from the water company or an employee doing it. It kind of surprised me, I will say. But I'm open to what the board thinks. I could see like the finance to the idea, the like task six, five, six, a lot of these could be reported by somebody else, not necessarily the LRPC lead. So anyway, I'm open to suggestions.
I just think that, you know, the LRPC chair should be able to direct the committee on which paths to go down and what decisions that need to be made. I just think they need more overall understanding of and items like asset management or whatnot. So I think the chair needs to be somebody that directs them. And I think Kathy's, it's nothing against Kathy, but I think it needs to be somebody that's understands long-range planning and has done some long-range planning before.
Joe Morgan just joined the meeting, you guys.
Basically, a board member is what you guys would like to see as a chair for LRPC, and that's okay with all of us.
Well, it could be a shareholder as well, or, right, because Tom's been doing it for a while and as not being a board member, so... But I agree. I mean, having somebody who could direct to LRPC, that would be better for an LRPC chair.
At the risk of stacking Tyler's plate, who better to look at long range planning than the general manager? And to supervise our group, to chair it. I mean, it's more of a leadership role, and certainly Tyler's got the experience and the drive, the reason for doing it.
So, again, refresh my memory, Long Range Planning Committee, there's some rules or guidelines about how many people from the board can be on it and how many people... There's some rules and guidance on what that committee looks like. Isn't that correct?
There is. The main rule I recall is that only three board members can be on it. Because otherwise, if you have four, then you have to open the meeting up to the public.
Oh, that's right.
So I'll come back to my original question, and that is, you know, what do we want the Long Range Planning Committee to be? Or do we even need a long-range planning committee if we divide up the various responsibilities? So the history of the LRPC, and Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, has sort of been cobbled together as the various years have gone by with more and more responsibilities added to it. You know, the primary role of it was, you know, through the USDA construction process. So do we even need an LRPC? And if so, what's the role?
Yeah. Yeah, originally it was when we first started looking for new well sources, and then it transitioned into the USDA project. So we had all those large projects going on for a few years. And now it's basically down to monitoring these tasks without, a real large project going on. So I think the idea of just splitting these tasks up and having, as required, having each lead report on it. And, if it's a couple people involved in each of the tasks, they can meet whenever they want or whenever it's needed in between board meetings and discuss it at the board meetings. I think that would be probably, a very doable option as opposed to the way we've been running it.
Well, I think if we do it into individual meetings, then you may lose some continuity or how those variables interact, because water usage, money. The one concern I would have is plant and equipment. Like we have somebody looks at, when the maintenance, when we're going to have a next major purchase. So I think it should be one person in charge of it and then have several people, get the data. I mean, water usage is just data. Finances is data. Maintenance is a schedule. You should have maintenance schedule for every piece of equipment, which I'm sure we do. So a lot of these need to be kind of synthesized into one thought process. And which you've done a great job. I mean, I have to admit, you've done very well with long range planning committee. So, but you've had all the information to make the decisions or make the recommendations. So if we split it up, no one person's going to have knowledge.
Yeah, right. And some of the committees will just kind of, peter out and kind of non-exist. And pretty soon we're going to have committees and tasks that are just not being done.
Well, if there's not a need for it, but if there's a need.
But if there's a need, I mean, if you just have individual people meeting on, and it's not under one umbrella of one group saying, this is all stuff we need to look at in long range and keep it moving forward, instead of just having individual people try to meet between meetings and then bring things forward to the director's meeting. I just think that those will just kind of peter out. Someone will just peter out and non-exist. So unless you have a one person leading them and make sure they keep moving on.
So Sharon, is it okay to jump in here and provide some comments?
Yes.
So I don't want to interrupt the board discussion, but a couple thoughts come to mind. First off, the LRPC has been a force of nature. I've never seen anything like it for my other clients. The amount of work that you've gotten out of the LRPC under Tom's leadership has been astounding. I mean, it's the kind of work that would require almost a full-time staff member. So it's really been incredible. But as you're starting to think about the future of the LRPC, it might be valuable to look at what other agencies do in similar situations. And one thing that I think you should consider, and this echoes a comment that Sharon made earlier, is thinking about standing committees with broad jurisdiction. So what most of my clients have is they have standing committees composed of board members with jurisdiction over things like finance, facilities, rate setting. I mean, these are just examples, but rather than the somewhat discrete tasks that are outlined in the table, think about a broader jurisdictional standing committees. And to Dan's point earlier, when you have those broad categories, you don't peter out, because this is long-term issues that you're going to be dealing with for the water company. They're not these sort of discrete tasks that have a set end date. And there's some value in thinking about a committee approach in that, you know, as someone mentioned earlier, for your LRPC, you can have 3 board members max. Otherwise, you're going to be having an open meeting of the board and we'll have to do all the notice. And it really just sort of bogs down the process. If you have various standing committees, you can have a mixture of board members, and it may be an opportunity for you to get more board members involved in committee work, spread out some of the labor, which I know is one of the goals of the LRPC reorganization, is not to have so much work sort of siloed in one person or one committee. So I think at least give that some thought. The other thing is, and a point that Dan made earlier, be sure to distinguish between committee members and those who are assigned to staff the committee. So committee members are typically going to be your decision makers. They're typically going to be board members or shareholders, and they're going to have voting authority. That's their key distinguishing factor. So they're going to get a vote on the various actions that the committee takes and brings back to the board. Staffing for the committee, typically done by water company staff, is an incredibly important part of your committee process, because that's really how things continue to get done, how your agendas get made, how your reminders get sent out. So it's very important to remember that staffing plays a role, but that's not necessarily membership on a committee. It may be staffing a committee. So those are my thoughts, and I'm happy to talk more about how others do it. I know it's a little bit of a different direction than what you're considering, but I'd say give it some thought. I think it has some benefits for where the water company's at in 2022.
Thank you.
No, I think those are great comments. I think the task part is like, is it a task just to get data, like water usage is, like how much water we use is a fact that a committee would have to use and determine whether or not you had to dig another well or you had to purchase more water from the county. So there's like fact-finding missions, and then there's also decision-making. So, I mean, it seems to me like long-range committee's done an excellent job at determining what facts we need and bringing it to the board for decision. So you can break each one of those things down into different things. But so I agree in general with what was just said. And I agree with Tom and the other comments. But that's kind of – I'm trying to boil it down into simple language, but
well, I do think we're faced with an interesting conundrum in that, you know, no one has really stepped forward to assume the chair role of the LRPC. So, you know, failing in that, then I think, you know, what Andrew has you know, outlined is, you know, perhaps the next best thing. And maybe it is a better thing than, you know, trying to keep the LRPC going as we've known it in the past.
Anything from the rest of the board? I agree, Andy. I think now might be a good time to divide it into 3 committees, like Andrew's saying. And maybe at one point, if there's one person from each committee who all meet together to just go over any findings before they report it to the board, that might be unless they're the same person's on all 3 committees or something. But anyway, I think if the 3 committees met and then reported to the board on a quarterly basis, I think we could still function.
I see Bob Banagas's names showed up on this table. I think we should nominate him to be the chair.
That'll teach him for not showing up, right?
I think the door hit him on the tail when he left. Well, I think we should. So, Sharon, I'm okay. I would recommend that. Or I am recommending that we pick three board members to come up with a structure and go through this table and then vote on it at the next meeting. So.
Well, I'd like Andrew to provide us with what some of his other clients are doing and how they structured the various aspects of our LRPC role as we've experienced it in the past.
Sure. Happy to.
At least to give us an some
start. Yeah, I mean, he can. No, I agree. He can meet with that subcommittee or whatever I'm talking about and go over the different ways that have been done and see how. So we would take that information. Yeah. Yes.
And who's the board members that are on the long range planning committee now?
We have Andy and
Andy, Jeff, and John.
Yeah, Andy, Jeff, and John, and Craig Lutz is a non-board member on the committee, and Joe Morgan.
And Bob McGinnis. Isn't Bob also?
And Bob McGinnis, too, right, yeah. Yeah.
Well, they'd be the best people to meet with Andrew. And
so the board members that are on the committee is just Andrew and Jeff?
And John.
No.
And Andy.
John, Jeff, and Andy.
Okay.
Andrew's our attorney, unless I'm totally gone crazy.
No.
You're not on the board. You're just an attorney. You're our attorney.
So. Andy Rich.
So it's Andrew. Andrew Ramos and Andy Rich.
Bill. Andy Rich.
I know. I got it.
It's me, Dan.
Yeah, I know. I got that.
Okay.
How can you forget Andy Rich? I mean,
I thought Andy was going to jump at the chance to be the LRPC chair, but that was just me.
There we go.
Yeah,
well, I'm up for re-election if I run.
If
I haven't seen the mailbox yet.
No, what, Jeff?
No resumes have shown up in my mailbox as of this morning. So Andy hasn't re-upped yet.
All right. So, go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to say that sounds like a good plan. And I, that discussion with the three board members and Andrew, I'd be willing to take part in that and offer up any background, recommendations from my point of view based on all these tasks. The rest of this chart, based on what happened in the last long range committee meeting, you can see a few others have volunteered for some of these tasks. So those can be taken into account as we work through this next step. And some of the tasks that we're showing in task 8, providing ongoing cash flow, rate structure, and reserves analysis recommendations, those were combined into other tasks, as you can see there. So, but some of these volunteers and some of the changes that were made in the last meeting can be taken into consideration based on the information that Andrew brings forward to us.
So I would like to volunteer to help do that, be one of the three board members to be in that to review what the long range planning committee should look like or what going forward.
So I think if Dan, if we add you to Jeff, Andy, and who else is on the long range?
John.
Then we have to do an open meeting, and that's not a problem because right. Any shareholder should.
And
It's totally fine. We just need to plan ahead. I think any board, I think for this, it might be okay to, you know, include any board member who's interested, but.
That was just in case one of the John, Jeff, or Andy were, didn't want to get sucked into something else.
Right.
So.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'll be quiet now.
Any other thoughts or comments before we move on from this?
So, yeah. So who's going to be the three board members that work with you and Andrew on this? We ought to decide that so that, you know, we're not discussing this the next meeting.
I thought they meant the LRPC board or the LR. Yeah.
Yeah, but if Dan joins us, which I think is a great idea, then we have to have an open meeting.
I'm good if you three want to take on the task and come report back to us and what it looks like. That's fine. I just don't want to have people being forced into a position.
So, Sharon, you're our chairperson. How do you want to move this forward?
Well, I could ask the three LRPC members who are board members if they want to participate in this meeting, or if they want to have Dan participate. That would be my first option. But I would like to see this group meet in the next month. So by May, we have a list of committees and who's on those committees or who's going to lead the committees.
Just go ahead with the three people who are on the LRPC. I'm good with that. Let's just move on.
Okay, so can the five of you meet in the next month?
I'm available. This is Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
Andy's available.
Okay, we'll work on a time to set up a Zoom meeting amongst the LRPC members, and we'll get together within the next month. Sounds great.
Okay.
So, John, you've been silent on this. Is this something you want to do, or would you?
I'm in total agreement that the long-term planning board should meet and discuss their need, which I think is definitely there, so that we don't wind up where we did several years back. It is something that we do need to continue to do. And I'm willing to participate with the other two members to give some direction for where we should go.
Okay. So I think I'll leave it up to Tom to set up the meeting.
Andrew.
Sound good?
Yeah, well, I'll wait for Andrew to provide me some information, and then we'll go ahead and set that up.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions or comments before we move on? Okay. Next chart. So one of those tasks, as you saw, was, continuing to provide the water meter consumption breakdowns on a monthly basis. So Kathy has been providing that, and we've seen this format before. So we started it a few months back. Lee started it, and Kathy's been doing it now. So you can see here the distribution that Kathy's been sending it to has been Sharon, myself, and office management and staff. So based on how the task assignments on the previous page unfold, obviously the distribution will need to change or include additional people so that analysis can be done wherever required on how the consumption trends and so forth have been going. But I just wanted to show you the latest from February usage that you can see here. Just summarizing some of that data, I put some percentages out on the left side there. So you can see there's 165 shareholders that didn't use any water. So a lot of people never came up to their places. And 60% is in our allocation range, the 1 to 350 cubic feet a month. So usually in the winter months, that level is higher, but usage in general has been down this year. And I'll touch on that in a minute too. So if you look at the upper four levels there, those are levels that are at least double our allocation, our monthly allocation. So there's 15% of the readings were over double our allocation, and they consume 62% of the water. So that's kind of an ongoing theme that we've seen in the past. So based on the data that Kathy puts out each month, I'm just bringing this up to, that we need to stay aware of the ongoing usage levels and trends and see how they might affect future rate structure analysis, compare against prior years. So, you know, Tyler brought to my attention that it wasn't until after April of last year that we had all the meters installed. So once we get past April of this year, we'll be able to do an apples to apples comparison of 2021 versus 2022 with all the meters. So that'll be good. We've never had that yet. So as I mentioned,
Tom, let me ask a question. So the section one tier, 21 shareholders are used over 4,000 cubic feet of water in February. Who are these people? What are they using the water for?
Can I say something? I think one of them was the Blue Lakes, the Homeowners Association. I think they filled fly-in. Like, because I saw a huge hit for the HOA, but I don't know. I think the others are landscaping, right, Tyler?
Yeah, for the HOA has a few landscaping meters, and they also have the bathroom down there at fly-in. So they do have at least 5 meters that I can think of. But they're really not the biggest part of the shareholder, the 21 shareholders here. There was two fairly large leaks as well, and this doesn't take account of that, which was through the month, we had 93,000 cubic feet was just in leaks. So we had a fairly large amount that was just leaks. We had two of them that ran for a couple days that were fairly large. So the fact that this isn't taking into account what was leaking, but technically the water did go through somebody's meter, it was just leaking on their property. So they did use it, but Tom is right. For the most part, the trends for as long as I've seen them have been that there's a very small percentage of shareholders use most of the water.
If I may add to that, in my neighborhood, there are now 3 new Airbnbs. One sleeps up to 20 people. It has been continually rented since the 1st of January.
But none of those, as I'm reading them, are popping up on our list. The people who are on there that use a lot of water are the habitual people. They use a lot of water all the time. Just one address that comes to mind is the house on Millbar Court. They consistently use a lot of water. But they're with COVID-19 and with people using the water, there isn't a lot that we can do about it. We're not in a drought stage 2 or 3 where we can be fining them because they're not reducing. It's it's their water. If they want to pay for it, they can use it. But there is a small percentage, even through the drought, when we asked people to conserve, and most of our community did, there still was a small percentage that did not care, and they were going to water and do what they wanted to do with their water.
Well, what are they doing with the water? Because remember, it shouldn't be irrigating this time of year.
It's usually landscaping. The last one I caught, it was in the winter, but because of the dry winter, they were trying to water beetle trees, or trees they felt were going to be lost if they didn't water them. They turned on the hoses and they left. They went back down the hill.
Wow.
Yeah. They didn't put it on a timer, nothing. They just turned on a hose and walked away. Mm-hmm. Another big one that we had was the freeze. When we had that freeze, about a half a month ago, Billy went around for probably 3 days and found half a dozen to a dozen leaks where people had came up over the President's Day weekend, turned on their irrigation and thought it was going to be springtime. They all go back home. Well, then they froze and broke and water spraying everywhere. So it definitely, there was a, I should say lack of not living up here forever and not knowing that even though it's still winter, we can freeze, even though it was 70 degrees in parts of January.
So is there any California code or anything that we could follow to change their behavior, or is this something they have a legal right to do?
As a mutual water company, you're pretty limited. We could think about some rules and regulations. Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think we have anything currently in place because, as you said, we're not in a declared drought emergency at this point.
Yeah, if I went to a drought stage 2 or stage 3, I could give them a fine card and give them a warning. I think it goes a warning, then a fine, and then the fine increases pretty substantially on the third time.
Well, it seems to me, is there anything in the HOA about landscaping? Using water?
I don't believe so.
Mm-hmm. No, and our policy had just changed really because we were forever was just pay a handheld hose fee and people could use the water. We didn't have meters. Now that we have meters and people are having irrigation, we're seeing what happens with that water. And that's kind of where
right, but there's
coming into play.
All right. So we already talked about the three-tier system, and I think there was a issue with that, right?
It's going to be tough to do a tier system because we have to justify how it shows that it costs us that amount to make the water over a certain amount. We can't just, because somebody's using a bunch of water, we can't just charge them a ton more, so hopefully they'll conserve more. We have to justify that at 100 or let's say 1,000 cubic feet at that point of them going over that it costs us more to deliver them that water. And it doesn't for us. It's one flat.
Well, I don't know whether you can say we're a mutual water company and our contract is you can use this X amount of water per month. And then I don't think that's legal, but.
It's tough. I know that we have a few people that are using a lot more, but if you look at my charts from the overall trends over the past, basically from COVID, and then once we had our piping fully installed, we've been saving 1 million to 2 million gallons every month.
Those are the piping.
Yeah. Fairly large savings that we've gone from, using 4 to 5 million in a month. Now we're down to 2 or 3. So we're actually using a lot less water. Billy and I have seen historical lows on a daily average once we go read the meters in the morning.
Yeah. Well, this has come up before at the board about the low number. Most of the water is used by a few people. Mm-hmm. So unless there's a legal remedy, I don't think we can do much.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if we could, for the real big abusers that are, the very high levels, if we could just send them reminders that they're using, X amount more than everyone else, could they please, try to cut back or look or give them, you know, we've always offered suggestions on how to cut your water usage, but I'm just wondering if we continually remind them of how much they're using compared to everyone else, if it would do any good.
Those constant reminders go out from the homeowners association and almost every lodge log every month in the summertime. They do a great job taking care of that. I can tell you that from the industry, from the landscape industry and water savings around the Northern California area, and I know Andrew can address this too, there's technology out there that can detect leaks and shut systems down so that the water does not, you know, run down the street for hours or days at a time. You know, I don't know if there's any of that technology on our main lines that went in, but I can tell you that other agencies are putting in huge fines for people that don't pay attention to things. There's no excuse for people being allowed to let water run on native trees while they're gone. Ramifications for wasting water are extremely long term. So I'm for doing anything that we're allowed to do to get people to cut back on this water waste.
And I just wanted to jump in because I think Jeff is framing it correctly. Everything that Tyler said is correct. From a rate setting perspective, you're pretty limited on trying to clamp down on your high users. But if you shift the perspective from being high use to waste and unreasonable use, there might be something to that argument that we could explore. And to my knowledge, I don't think we've explored that much before. I know there are penalties for real obvious runoff and waste and unreasonable use in your code, but I don't think that we've looked at things like excessive watering of native trees and things like that as perhaps being wasteful and something that the mutual water company could enforce. But we could certainly look into that. As Bill said, this issue has come up before. I think it comes up frequently, and we've struggled in the past to frame a direction on where the water company wants to go in terms of clamping down on these high users or not.
We made a conscious decision to not have tiered rates. The most successful water agencies in water conservation have tiered rates where the more water you use, the more you pay for it. And, you know, the conscious decision was to cover the cost of producing water, which I think is at about $1.60 a unit now that we're charging for it, regardless of how much you use. There's no incentive to save water based on cost.
Yeah, but that raises the question, though, Jeff, of, you know, what amount of money would it take to actually change one's behavior? Exactly. You know, I know that, you know, we had that discussion in the LRPC, and, you know, we couldn't come up with, you know, do you double the number? Do you triple the number? Do you quadruple it? You know, what is the threshold of behavior change? And we weren't able to really, you know, tackle that.
Yeah. So the other point, Andy, was that I thought we were a mutual water company. We had to justify the rate increase. So if one user uses for, you know, like the 1.2%, is that costing the mutual water company more money to give them that water? And the answer was no. So, you know, as long as the water costs for producing are exactly the same, then we couldn't go to a two tier because then unless we could get, I can't believe there's not some, well, I can believe, but California is highly regulated. So somebody, you would think it, or the feds have looked at it. I mean, I know if somebody's watering their lawn every day and their water seeps down on their neighbor's yard, then the neighbor has a complaint, right? Is a nuisance, but they may not care because they get free water, but,
Yes, I think Andrew had a good point in that, you know, if we shift our focus from saying we're looking at high water users to our focus being we're looking at water wasters, maybe that opens up degrees of freedom to enforce it.
Yeah, maybe a policy about wanton misuse of water resources could be a way to go with a huge penalty. You know, for those shareholders that are found to be, you know, I'm just having a difficult time understanding in the month of February how somebody could use 15,524 cubic feet of water. That's unconscionable.
I think the majority of it, we had 15 leaks in the system because of freezing and then unfreezing lines and pipes. And I believe that's the majority of these 21 is 15 had leaks.
I think going forward, we should have some sort of a report out to the board about who these people are and what the water's being used for. I understand leaks, but still, 15,600 cubic feet of water—that's huge.
Yeah, but that could be if a full, let's say, like I told you about the irrigation being on, if that's on a 3/4 PVC pipe and it fully broke and sat there and ran overnight, that could easily be 10,000-12,000 cubic feet.
Right. So, but the idea I would have is consistent with what Andy just said, was if you put a table together, like how many were leaks, so you list out 15 leaks on the one side and then how much water was wasted, and then kind of write it, what was the corrective action and what was the cause of it? And then, like, if it's PVC piping, then we could put in some type of regulation on pipes that break easy during freeze thaw.
But that's one of the water service pipes that is allowed for them to use, and we recommend for them to use. The fact that they don't bury it, they just strap it up underneath their deck, that's why it broke, not because of the material itself. They left it exposed to single digit temperature.
But when you write a regulation or you want to change behavior, then you specifically put in there about if it breaks and it's not underground or it's not protected from freeze thaw, then you can give them a penalty fine. But if you say it's okay to use PVC pipe and they can put it on their roof, they can put it under the deck, like you said, and you get a freeze thaw, then we're not telling them the full story. So we can say you can do it, but this is the penalty if it breaks and you lose X number of cubic feet of water. I think we can enforce something like that.
Oh, you can't. No, you can't, because all you have to is look at Yosemite, and you'll see what frozen water does when the rocks come tumbling down. Doesn't matter what kind of it is, if it freezes, it breaks.
No, but if it's above ground, and we're talking about having it underground versus above ground.
It doesn't matter. If it freezes, it breaks, whether it's copper, galvanized, or plastic.
And all right, so
order our right, so responsibility those 15 stops.
Well, how many of those 15 people that had leaks, how many of them had pipes above ground that broke? And how many had pipes below ground that broke? That's your data set.
Above ground, Bill. And all of the pipes, if they've got water in them, will freeze. If they freeze, they'll break. What you have to do when you leave is drain your system. Turn the pipe water off and drain it. There's no other way to keep that from happening.
Yeah, I think that our target right now, at least, isn't so much the people who neglected their pipes and had a pipe break. Our target is the guy who is watering trees, and when you say that you shouldn't be doing that, he says, "I don't care." That's right. The target.
Exactly.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And that person is not going to be affected by having to pay more money. He doesn't care. But maybe legally, can we do something to limit, put a limit on how much he can get, and then just shut him off after that?
do.
I don't think we can turn off their water.
Yeah. I don't think we can turn off the water.
Is there a way to regulate what goes out in their irrigation, though?
No. If we had a, if we charged a different rate for irrigation than household use. And so I don't know, everything goes through 1 meter, right?
That's right.
So if we put in a regulation that you had to have a separate meter for landscaping and pipe, then if that's legal, it's going to cause a ruckus. But I mean, it's better than, you know, hiring somebody to walk with signs around the house and say this person's not conserving water, you know, get one of our local protest groups. But is there a way, something way like that? I mean, I don't, Jeff, you know more about this than I do. So.
Well, irrigation meters have, separate irrigation meters have been around for decades, but somebody has to want to pay for them and be interested in monitoring outside water versus inside water. So generally on parks and golf courses and that sort of things where there's they're huge water users. And, you know, on a cemetery, the buildings might not require hardly any water, but obviously the ground biggest users. I don't see many separate irrigation meters on residences of any size.
I was just going to say, if I may, in future reporting of the usage, I recommend that we separate the leaks from the large users and at least inform the board of where the water is going to the best of our ability, and with the water masters out in the field as well.
Yeah, I think that would be helpful, Lee.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So just a couple comments I have on the discussion that's been going on. And as far as like penalty fees, over the years, as we developed our rate structure, the consumptive rate structure, you know, through all my reading online, and it was when conservation was real big and the different counties were doing different things to keep their usage levels you know, at a reasonable level. You know, some of the counties imposed penalty type fees. And from everything I read, a lot of them incurred lawsuits from their users. So all I'm saying is we will need to be, if we go, you know, a route like that, we're going to need to obviously use Andrew and be very careful about how we approach that and make sure that we don't put ourselves into a situation where we have a few of our shareholders trying to file lawsuits against us.
Can I make a suggestion? This is Joe Morgan. You know, the number of users that are excessive is a relatively small amount. That's what the basis we were talking about. And I think your suggestion that Tom made was that we go back to each of those people that are doing that, never mind the leaks and such, just the ones who are excessive users, and work with them and see which, how you can narrow that down. It used to be when nobody knew how much you used, when there's no meters, then you were kind of, you know, hidden. But now with the meters there and everybody's being, all your usage is being known, they might change their mind when they realize that they've been singled out. And so I think you could work your way down to that number from a relatively small number to even smaller yet by jawboning them as such.
I agree.
Tyler, you've had direct contact, I think, with the Millbar court owner.
Yeah, we had contacted them numerous times.
Knowing that it's true, what would you say was effective?
I mean, effectiveness is different than us going out there and just talking to them. Like I say, most of them have those few people, they have that ideology of, well, I don't live here. Well, when I come, I'm going to use as much as I want. They don't think of that. I don't need to conserve. And then going back to the whole somebody wanting to sue us, that I've heard that a dozen plus times over, that the homeowner, when we were telling them you need to cut back, especially during the drought periods when we were handing out drought notice cards to them, I got told numerous times that I'm a lawyer, I will be suing me personally and the company. And so that's where being a water cop is very tough, to go tell somebody you can't wash your car, you can't water your plants that you just planted because you lost all your trees to the beetles. I mean, I've heard every case and scenario.
Any of these guys Russian oligarchs?
Yeah.
Anyway, we probably shouldn't mention, Andrew, we shouldn't mention addresses and right. people's names, yeah, or addresses.
I completely yeah. agree. Let's keep it anonymous, at least in open session, please. Yeah.
I want to.
Right, but I mean, I think if somebody's using too much water and they file a lawsuit against the water company for asking for conservation, I think the public outcry would be on our side. So I don't think they can win.
Give me a minute. I'll give you an example. In Blackhawk, which is in, it's a high-end residential community in Contra Costa County. And during the 1988 drought, a homeowner in Danville brought this up, where they said, I will use as much water as I want and you can't stop me. And that's exactly what happened. Education and getting people to buy into conservation is the only real way to do it, to try and, you know, there's not enough people or time to be water cops to go around and do that stuff. All of these things that get put in during drought to try and save water, people still have to buy into it and have to agree to it, or especially the people that have got money that don't care what water costs or.
Yeah, but Jeff, I mean, nobody has a constitutional right to use all the water they want to. I don't believe that. So there are limits, and the power company, electricity people do it, and the water people have the same, utilities have the same clout. So you just don't have a constitutional right to use all the water you want. So, I mean, I can't believe, well, I mean, I believe because you can pick a judge, but it seems like the law would be on our side.
So East Bay could try to legislate or to charge for it. That was their only recourse, was to raise the water rate to where it became exorbitant. Make it dollar down above a certain point and you'll see people shut the water up. Marin Municipal, Sonoma Water, you know, those are ones that have rates that enforce conservation. We don't have rates that enforce conservation.
So I have on my homework for today's meeting to do a little bit of research. It'll be limited, but we'll give an idea to the board of sort of where the extent is on potential enforcement powers for waste and unreasonable use, and bring that back. And maybe I'm hearing that maybe there's a water supply and conservation committee in your future for the LRPC breakup. But this is an ongoing discussion that, you know, I think we could benefit from having a little bit of research and some more information for the board.
Yeah, I think the perspective is that we still have a relatively small number of people doing this. So it's not a large segment. So
it's 20% of our total water usage in February. How can that not be significant?
It wasn't significant. I said the number of people doing it is small.
Well, Jeff, that's why we need to see this, you know, this number broken out. You know, if the vast majority of that's from leaks, then that's, you know, a different perspective than thinking that, you know, 21 shareholders, you know, use 15,000 cubic feet of water. So, you know, in the to save some time and allow us to move on, I would suggest that Lee, in the future, you know, maybe tiers one and two sort of break it out into leaks and excessive usage.
I agree. That'll happen, yes.
Yeah.
In fact, we can. I would like to break this up and get it to the board in between the next meeting, like within the next couple of weeks, and tell you exactly what happened with these 21 people.
Thanks, Lee.
That would be great, Lee.
Thank you, Lee.
I have one suggestion. I don't know if I want other people's opinions. In the town where I live, whatever we use, an extraordinary amount of electricity because our house is old, we would get a letter from the local utility saying, you use 50% more gas and electricity than your neighbors. And they would show us like what we use versus the average of what most people were using who had energy efficient houses. I don't know if it's worth sending something to the top, you know, 50 people on this list and say, here's what your allotment is, here's what most people are using, and here's what you're using. If that would give them something more to think about, in addition to please conserve.
I have a reminder that I would like to talk to Kathy and Tyler about, to send letters to the highest users and see if we can't get them to change their usage.
Yep, I agree.
Maybe run that letter past legal counsel so that we don't find ourselves with some sort of a legal backlash.
All right.
So as Tyler alluded to earlier, with all this being said about the heavy usage in some areas, 2022 has been very well, that it's much lower than past years. I quickly looked at Tyler's information on one of his charts, and January was the lowest level since 2013. February was the lowest level in 7 years. We had the lowest 2-month total usage in 9 years. So for the two months so far in 2022, our total is about 20% lower than last year. So usage has been down quite a bit this year. Any other comments or questions on this subject?
Well, the December and January water usage certainly had to do with Snowmageddon in those snowstorms when there was nothing but 4 feet of snow on. So we'll see what it looks like in April and May.
Right. Off to a good start, though.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, the next topic is, I have my pages back. Okay, so at our last board meeting in January, we reviewed and approved the update to the reserves fund policy. So those were both originally reviewed and approved on January 5th, 2019, the reserves fund policy and the reserves fund operating procedure. So in January, we went in and revised the policy, but kind of overlooked the fact that the reserves fund operating procedure kind of mirrored the policy in more detail. So, so you can see at the bottom of this chart that we reviewed and updated the reserves fund target level for the capital asset replacements. That was based on finishing the asset management plan and determining what the estimated replacement cost of assets with the remaining useful life of 5 years was. And that was our approach for how much we would put into that reserve fund. So that went from 346,000 to 501,565, as you can see there. So next chart. So as I mentioned, the policy and the reserves fund operating procedure were very similar. They had different, different reasons for each of the different documents, but they were very similar in a lot of ways. The purpose of the operating procedure was to provide the primary responsibilities of office management and staff in all those areas listed there: identifying, approving, funding, use of authority, reporting and monitoring, annual reviews, and so forth, that are described in the fund policy. So the reserves fund table in the operating procedure is very similar to the reserves fund policy target levels that you just saw on the prior page. As a result, it is recommended that the reserves fund operating procedure also be updated. It has the reserves fund table that is very similar to the target levels shown in the policy. So if we move on to the next page, you can see that the original version of the operating procedure table is shown there. We hadn't completed the USDA project. We hadn't completed the asset management plan. So a lot of those were showing as TBDs. So you see there the proposed updated version matches up with the table that was shown in the policy. And you can see there the USDA short debt reserve, that changed based on the final payment level at the end of the USDA project. That that went down some, so that dollar amount changed. But in replacing all those TBDs, you can see the values that that go in there. You can see the change that was made to the capital asset replacement reserve there that matches up with the amount shown in the policy. So basically all we're doing here is requesting an update to the procedure to match up with the policy. So it shows at the bottom of the revision, the maximum target level there is showing at 1,341,000. We currently have in our reserve bank accounts 1,444,000 roughly. So our maximum target level is under what we currently have in our bank accounts for reserves. So I also have attached a copy of the full procedure that follows these charts. And it just, at the beginning, if you move on, Kathy, you can see so what we're doing here is, I don't know if anyone's had a chance to look through this. It's been a few years since it first came out, but originally got approved January 5th, 2019. Bob McGinnis was president, so we would need to show this as revision one with Sharon and Bill as the two signers that would approve this with board approval. None of the text changed. If you go all the way down through the document, everything stayed the same until you got to the fund table that I just showed you on the prior chart. These are the same figures that we're showing there. So this all matches up with the figures in the policy. And then at the very end, it just shows the revision that was made in this document. So I'm opening it up to any comments or questions and ask for the board to discuss and either approve or let me know what concerns you might have.
So what does our treasurer say? Have input?
No, I'm fine with it.
Because this would be part of your responsibility to manage going forward, would it not, as treasurer?
I think so, yeah. That's the idea, right?
Yes.
So I had a question. The USDA debt reserve, is that 42,000 to pay off the existing loan? What is that for?
No, it's 40, just a, go ahead, Lee.
The 42,000 we had to keep to show USDA that we were going to be solvent and able to repay the 427. So in other words, for 10 years, we were supposed to keep a bank account of 10% of what we had to pay annually in a separate reserve. Right now we have 43,000, I think, in that separate reserve.
Yeah, this was the first year that we needed to commit that amount.
So they just want us to have 10% extra in our account to help pay off the...
Yes, so they can make sure we're solvent and at least, you know, after 10 years, we have that fully funded and they sit back and relax a little more.
And then is there anything in this plan to pay for long-term capital assets? Like replacing the pipe in Unit 13? And I thought there was discussion about having funds for long-term capital.
Yeah, the capital asset replacement reserve, the 501,000, that's the start for that.
So every year we would put $500,000 in there?
No. We'd have to go back to the asset management plan documents to see what the values were. We reviewed those, I think, might have even reviewed them back in January. But yeah, that there's a... there's an amount less than that that is set aside into our reserve accounts each year that builds up to the amounts that we need in the out years based on those asset replacement dates.
And so that's in a separate reserve fund?
That's part of this reserve fund. But it continues to build each year.
Okay, so do we need to show that number that's going in there each year? I mean, should that be on this table?
I mean, I guess we could probably have a separate table that shows those incremental values.
Variable amount, though. I don't know how we would do that, Tom.
Right.
So didn't we have at the end of the year, Lee, $183,683 roll over into reserves?
Correct. Yes.
Yes. So the amount each year was, you know, roughly on average, like $150,000 that we needed to. And we determined based on what they just talked about, the net gain over the last several years, our net gain has been more than that amount that we need to set aside. So we determined that that gain that we've been seeing will fulfill the need for the incremental amounts that we need to build for our capital asset reserves.
I think what we found, Tom, was that some of the length of the lifespan, I guess, of certain assets were greater than we thought they were, and we kind of adjusted from that. And I'm with you. I think we talked about it in January.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's where it comes from, and is that different things, you know, depreciate at different rates. And we tried to end up with something that would cover those replacement costs as they were needed, but that whole thing is kind of a combat, you know?
So it might be worthwhile in our next board meeting to present, you know, the annualized look at the asset management reserves based on the asset management plan up against this table to see if any more clarification would need to be made in this document.
Yeah, because I mean, if we're putting money aside for asset management now, and that sounds like we are, then it should be documented. You know, what's the basis of that, and how much is it somewhere? I mean, that's one of the problems. There's not a document now that shows what we're putting in for long-term assets.
Yeah, I was just going to ask the same question, sort of stated differently. You know, of the year-end $183,683,000 that are labeled retained earnings, how is that, those monies split up between the various reserve funds?
It's there. It's not a one lump sum there. And what I would like to suggest, if you wanted to see the whole one lump sum for reserves, is because Edward Jones has such a high $2.5 million FDIC ceiling, we could consolidate all the funds and put them in there rather than having them in our three or four other bank accounts. That would be beneficial. You could see what we had in a glance.
So couldn't we just present the information like, here's a reserve fund and maybe some of it's in bank accounts and some's in Edward Jones, but it just gets reported differently?
Yes, that's exactly, yeah. And it is listed on the balance sheet as reserves.
Right.
Right.
Now we have the 546 plus another 100,000, 200,000 for incidental, which is the 183.
I think we'd like to see where that 180,000 went. That's all. I think that's what Andy's saying.
And unless I can have a bank account where I can put it all in and show everybody that the 183 from 2021 went here, it's because of FDIC ruling, I break it up and it's just there. It's in our other bank accounts.
Right, but it could be a spreadsheet that says we put 50,000 here and we had 183,000. Okay. We put 50,000 here, 75,000 here.
I see what you're saying now. Okay.
Would that work for you, Andy?
Yeah, so somebody's got two sources of the video or call going. There's a horrible echo. But to answer your question, yeah, I think in the short term, but you know, since there are large sums of monies in our reserve funds, I think we should have a regular, you know, report out on, you know, how the, you know, reserve funds are doing. You know, on the Edward Jones, you know, question that Lee raises, I'm not in favor of putting all of our eggs in one basket, you know, given, you know, some of the issues that we've had in the past. But, you know, that's really for the treasurer to think through and recommend.
I can definitely put a spreadsheet for you all and take it out and explain more in the balance sheet.
Any other discussion on this document? And I guess ask if these questions raise anything as far as any updates that you would recommend at this point in order to get it approved.
You're asking for a motion, Tom?
This is Dan again. We need to document someplace what we're going to do for the long-term assets, what that reserve fund looks like. If one want to do that in a separate document, that's fine. Or should it be in this document?
Maybe we should just, since it is already documented in the asset management plan, maybe we can just put a reference in here. Would that work?
Remove the table yeah. And put a reference. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not fixed funds that are here. We can add to.
Yeah, because that would require us updating this all the time, and instead of doing that, this should be updated annually. But if we tried putting figures in here from the asset management plan, it would have to be updated more often than that.
So, yeah, the asset management fund we can follow. Take the target table out of here, and we're good to go.
Well, the asset management plan really just affects the capital assets.
The reserve
replacement.
Sorry, right.
So you couldn't take this whole table out. But we could put a reference into the asset management plan for that capital asset replacements line item.
I mean, we could put a note in here saying that the capital asset plan is shown in that report, and that those annual amounts need to be added to the reserve fund, or somehow document how much we have to add for capital assets to our reserves every year.
Yeah, I can come up with a good reference comment in here that applies to the asset management plan funding that we're setting aside.
Yeah,
and review it with the board and see if it sounds okay.
Thank you.
All right, can I make a comment about the reserve fund operating procedure under number 2, capital asset reserves fund? I do wonder why the fund remained. The current replacement cost of assets associated with the fund with a remaining useful life of 5 years. Why that? And the reason I ask, suppose I've got a $10 million item coming up in 6 years. Shouldn't I be reserving for that?
We are in the asset management plan. That is the amounts that show in there. So based on all the background information in setting up that amount, that was the guidance that I found to be most appropriate. So that was the amount that I showed in here. And but as far as the asset management plan and the funding that's being set aside, it does match up with the dollar amounts for replacing assets on a year by year basis. So
So I'm just thinking that really should be the, looking at all of your assets, it should be the value of the depreciation of all of your assets ought to be what your reserves are.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think maybe that needs to be reviewed again and taken into account, and see if anything in here needs to be revised. I see your point.
Yeah, I think until you finish the reserve study, we didn't know what that number was, but now you've completed that reserve study, and we do have the number. So I think that's a more logical target.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll just have to figure out a way to do it, because as Lee mentioned, the amounts that were the amounts do fluctuate each year, obviously based on the capital assets that need to be replaced and which year they need to be replaced in. So that amount could in fact from year to year, even go down. just based on the outlay of all the asset replacements over, you know, the next several years. So, but I can look into that, and based on, you know, the point that you bring up, I can see what may need to be changed.
Okay, thank you.
So, Sharon, or can somebody send me the finalized asset management plan that the engineering firm did with us? I'm trying to find my files and I can't find it. So, I think we talked about this last meeting.
So, I think it never actually got finalized. Maybe Tom, you've updated the spreadsheets, right?
Yeah, we have the final version that they sent. And from that point, you know, some of the tables and appendices have been updated based on the last couple years and having meetings with Tyler and Billy as far as any changes in the assets and their replacement dates and so forth. But I can send you the complete copy of the asset management plan, the final copy that was submitted by MC Engineering, along with all the tables and appendices. And then from there, you know, whatever else, you know, I'll share as far as any of the updates that we did in the last couple of years from that original plan.
So where's the document that tells us how much we should be putting in every year for long-term assets? There's not one? Is that what I'm hearing?
There is. And those were presented. Some of that was presented, not necessarily at the very detailed level of every asset, but that's been presented in some of our board meeting charts.
And this goes showing for assets that have to be replaced in 30 or 50 years, it covers all those assets.
Yeah.
So that's I think we all should see is how much should we be putting into our reserves every year for the long term.
Yeah, that's I can refresh everyone's memory and make sure, and I can send out all those charts again. But we've been reviewing those in several board meetings over the last year.
Yeah, I know we reviewed them, but I mean, what's the one we're following? That should be documented somewhere. This is the plan we're following, and going forward, this is how much we're going to put in every year for long term.
Mm-hmm.
Did we approve that? I think we talked about it a lot, but I don't know, saying this is what we're going to do for long term.
I think all those things were approved, Dan. And we haven't done anything that wasn't approved.
Yeah, I don't know if it was at the January meeting. I'm pretty sure it might have been the one before that, but it was approved at one of the last couple board meetings. But Dan, I can send you the charts that stuff that you're looking for right now. I can just, I think, put your mind at ease as to the path that we're following.
Okay. Yeah. And just, I would like to have the full report that comes from MC Engineering.
Okay.
All right.
But the numbers that are going to be presented in MC Engineering's report are not necessarily going to be the numbers that are in Tom's tables that we've updated. We just never went back and updated the actual text of the document to reflect.
Yeah.
Correctly, Tom?
I understand that the MC came up with the table, and then Tom and Tyler and operations went through and they made some adjustments to it on what they know about the system. And so, you know, it was a recommendation from MC, and then we finalized it and said, this is what we're going to do for the next 10, 20 years. So.
Yeah. And in some areas, their approach wasn't, you know, after we reviewed it in detail, their approach wasn't what we felt it should be. So you know, they put burdens on all the assets where, you know, we felt that, you know, different extra burdens on those assets weren't required for some of the simpler assets. And they had put a dollar burden on all of them that, you know, jacked the price way up. So, so we made changes like that too, but I'll send you the original one. And, if you need follow-up on the changes that were made, I can certainly provide that too.
So you'll send me the original one and then the one that was approved by the board, the table that was approved by the board? Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Yep. So based on that, I'm going to propose that we hold off on approving this. And you know, I'm going to come up with a reference into this document that points to the asset management plan information, and we'll go from there. We'll see if that satisfies the need for that for this, and if not, we'll get it to a point where everyone feels comfortable.
I think that's a good idea. Thank you, Tom. Does that work for everyone?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Thank you, Tom, for all your work on this effort. I know it's a major undertaking. We appreciate everything you've been doing for the water company.
You're welcome.
All right. So on to new business. I think Tyler Mayo is up.
So we need to adopt the water disconnection residential service for non-payment. And we need to adopt the next one down, which is the notices for the disconnection of water service for non-payment. These were templates given to me by Andrew and his team, and we filled in everything that we needed to do. It's just basically being able to shut off somebody's water due to non-payment under the Water Shutoff Protection Act and the new COVID-19 rules.
Sharon, are you going to open it for discussion, or
sure?
How are we doing?
Do we have to have a motion before we can discuss it?
Motion before. Yes.
All right. I move that we accept these policies.
Second.
A second. Go ahead.
Sorry, who seconded?
John.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Okay, so open for discussion. Hearing no discussion, shall we vote to approve?
Aye.
Aye.
Are we doing a roll call?
Let's do a roll call. That might be more organized.
Thank you. Kathy?
Sharon Tobias?
Aye.
Andy Rich?
Aye.
Bill Cover?
Aye.
Dan Crosby?
Aye.
John Dashner?
Aye.
Bruce Etter?
Aye.
Jeff Jones?
Aye.
The motion carries. Thank you.
So next is a resolution to open a bank account to diversify some of our funds that we have accumulating in Bank of America. Currently at the Bank of America, we have $526,000. $296,000 is in the cash that we are operating account. 7,000 is in payroll, and the balance is in the interest maximizer at B of A of 249. And I would like to propose that we take $245,000 of that and open up an account, hopefully at U.S. Bank in Angels Camp, although there's also Wells Fargo, Umpqua, Oak Valley. Those are all options for local banks. And by local, I mean three of those, or two of those are in Sonora. The one that I would like to choose, U.S. Bank, is in Angels Camp, which makes it a little easier to get to for Tyler to move funds when it becomes necessary.
Well, Lee, I'm sure you're aware that Bank of America is closing their Sonora branch.
I am not aware of that.
Yeah, I got a notice that they're closing. I think it's July 1st. So maybe we ought to think about moving our entire bank account to U.S. Bank.
Well, I can, okay, I see the validity in that. However, B of A, we remotely use. We don't need to go to Sonora to process the checks that do come into the office. They're done via an automated machine inside our office. So there's no deposit that's now taken to the bank to deposit. It's all via cloud. So wherever B of A is, in this instance, is okay with us. It's when we take our monies and put it into holding accounts, which is what I'd like to call them, to diversify to be under the FDIC rulings, that I would like to have those monies in a more local account. But that's up to the board.
I believe you're looking for a motion to approve this resolution, and I would like to make a motion to adopt opening a new bank account.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second it.
Any discussion?
Do we need to directly at which bank, or can she choose a bank? Because there's a blank on this form for bank.
Four locals to choose from, or an infinite amount. Fidelity is another one that we could use online. The locals are U.S. Bank, Umpqua Bank in San Andreas, Oak Valley, and Wells Fargo, which are both in Sonora. My choice.
So which one would you want, Dan? Because we can do that one.
You also have Wells Fargo and San Andreas.
San Andreas, which is basically about an even stretch from Arnold.
Now, we would want one that has the electronic banking or the cloud, as
they all do.
Lisa.
Yeah. They all do.
So if anybody on the board has a preference, I think we don't really have to change the text, but you can take our word, we'll use that one. You may get to the bank and they can't do it for some reason.
Lee recommends U.S. Bank, and I will recommend U.S. Bank.
Does anybody have it? Is that okay?
Yeah, it's fine by me. In fact, I have two accounts at U.S. Bank, and I found them to be very responsive.
Okay, so the motion is to open an account with U.S. Bank.
And savings or checking? Could I ask for savings or checking? It's up to you guys.
Is there an advantage to one over the other?
Savings account would earn us 0.01% interest APR or APY. So no, not really.
Well, no. If they're two accounts, if they're regulated as two different accounts, and you have higher reserve fund insurance or whatever the FDIC is.
Can't regulate that way anymore. The FDIC used to go by, we used to be able to take two directors and have them open a bank account and then take two other directors and open another account at the same, but FDIC goes by your employer identification number now. So you have to keep it under 250.
No, I was saying, I was saying something different.
Oh,
saying is the savings account a separate account number than the checking account? Are those insured separately?
No.
Even if it's by the same person?
Yes. No, it's all one bank and one EIN.
Well, I would think, a savings account would be prudent. You know, if I'm, one of our shareholders, I would, like to think that we were being prudent in the management of their monies. And even though 0.01% is peanuts.
0.01%?
It would just, the optics would look better, I think, if it was in a savings account.
U.S. Bank savings account and a vote.
Anything else? I think we need a vote. Can we do a roll call?
Sharon Tobias?
Aye.
Andy Rich?
Aye.
Bill Cover?
Aye.
Dan Crosby?
Aye.
John Dashner?
Aye.
Bruce Utter?
Aye.
Jeff Jones.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to update rules and regulations and new services.
Going over our website and looking at the rules and regulations for new connections, it was quite out of date. So here is the original that is on our website right now. It basically talks about there's a current fee of $140 for us to install a meter. You can pay the handheld hose fee. All these things are no longer the way we install a meter and have a new connection hooked to the meter. So going to the next one, these were all the corrections in red that I had made or additions I added. Mainly the only addition would have been the PEX pipe. And then the that the shutoff valve needs to be installed in the homeowner's water box and next to the BLSMWC water box. They could also choose to do it up at their cabin, but we recommend to do it just in front of the meter box. Basically, all the other parts were taken out.
So, Tyler. Looking at the list of appropriate materials, Kathy, can you scroll down to the changes?
Yes. You want to see the one with the red lines on it?
Yes.
Here you go.
Okay. Scroll down a little further. So right there. So service pipe. Why wouldn't you want to remove galvanized iron? Isn't that, pretty out of date?
Yes, it's very out of date. It's, but still, especially in Arnold, is a used pipe. I would not recommend installing galvanized, especially anything near brass or copper, because then you're going to have galvanic corrosion, which in turn would lead to some type of leak.
Yeah,
we could remove galvanized iron off there completely and just be copper of those two types, PVC Schedule 40. Or now PEX pipe.
Which on PEX, it raises a question in my mind. Have they improved the quality of that item? I know not too many years ago, it was a pretty sketchy item.
Yeah, it's a NSF approved. The only one that's still NSF approved is a PEP pipe. That's the one I didn't put on there. It's becoming more and more obsolete. It's PEP or PEX is taking the place of PEP.
Right.
Pipe,
PEP.
So, but yes, PEX is now NSF approved. That would be with any pipe. I wouldn't allow them to put in unless it's NSF approved.
Well, can we allow them to do anything?
Whoa. Who is?
I'm not even there.
Is that Sharon speaking from the grave?
Right.
No. We're having an audio issue here at the office. So Sharon and I are trying to share the audio.
We can recommend what they put in their service line, but we can't tell them what to put in their service line. That's up to them. They can lay a garden hose on top of the land if they wanted to.
No, it actually in this, it states that they have to bury it. We're no longer allowing any of that.
Nice. No, no.
Temporary connections, right? From a house to a house or to backfeed. That's
right.
An emergency situation we might allow, but being that a garden hose is not NSF approved, you should not be drinking out of that for any length of time.
Right.
Well, should you state in the service pipe then that piping must be NSF approved?
I can add that in there. Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, I would remove galvanized iron.
Basically, I would say NSF approved materials, maybe not designated to only the pipe, just because PEX uses a brass type fitting to go with it. So I'll word that as a NSF material.
Recommended. And then do you want to put a date when this becomes active for all connections after the date of this memo or whatever? Because what's already in the ground,
today going forward would be the date. If we adopt this, this would be what's on our website and what will be given to anybody who comes into the office and pays their new connection fee of the $7,131.
Yeah, the suggestion is to put a date that this is effective as such and such a date.
We'll note at the top of the heading where it says the the recommended. Thanks, Kathy. We'll put updated and then today's date.
Yeah, effective date. Effective date's gotta be in there.
Okay, you want effective. Okay. Yes.
So regarding the fee. How is that 7131 number reached? Why not 7,500? Why not a round number? Why not 10,000?
We were mimicking the cost to CCWD because that's a part of our capacity fees that we're supposed to be collecting the connection fees of basically exactly what CCWD charges according to the contract of the water agreement. We haven't raised them in some time. We probably need to go through and there's a particular equation to use that's supposed to give you your service connection fee. I know the equation just because of what CCWD uses. We need to probably go through that, use that equation and figure out what a new connection fee is. But I wasn't planning on raising that rate this year.
Well, it is a source of income.
Yes, it's about $8,500 for the one that CCWD charges right now. So we're quite a bit different.
Well, how long would it take you to calculate the actual number?
Oh, I could have it to you by Monday sometime.
Well, if we're making changes to this, why don't we do them all at the same time? Mm-hmm. Or if you want, you know, if CCWD is 8,500, then make ours 8,500.
That makes sense.
And I wanted to note that there's some additional costs that you may want to capture in that new connection fee as well. It might be worth some additional thought about it as well, depending on where the board wants to go, but I can talk to Tyler about a couple different options for how to design that fee.
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate.
So then we vote on it during the next board meeting.
I was watching the CCWD board meeting on, was that Wednesday? Yeah, Wednesday. That and they were actually going over it. And so that's where I first saw their equation and how they come up with their fee for that. That they adjust annually. So if we do something of the same, or we just mimic what they have, because that's what they're wanting us to do as well, We don't want to be so far behind on those connection fees that if, say, one day we were purchasing more capacity, that we haven't collected that money.
Yeah, so I would say, consult with Andrew on, his thoughts on other items to include in the calculation and, come back in the next board meeting with, a full-blown recommendation for this policy.
Okay.
Show this for next meeting.
Yeah, that way you don't have to have it done by Monday.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Tyler. So our next item is the appointment of elections chair. We appointed a nominations chair, but not an elections chair. So we, I don't have to make a motion. I can just appoint Jeff Jones to be the elections chair.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah, I believe it's a chair appointment.
Okay. And I did want to follow up. There's been some questions over the past 6 months off and on about the, so we have 7 board members and our seat status and when people are up for election. And Andrew, is it okay if I kind of outline what we're, the approach we're going to do?
Absolutely.
Okay. So here's the challenge is last year when we did an election, we should, because one of the positions, we were finishing out Paul Penny's term. One person should have been elected for a 1 or 2 year term or something. I forgot. Right. So, but we didn't do that. We didn't make that distinction when we sent out the election package and we got our new directors. So now we have 3 people up for election in 2022, 1 person up for election in 2023. And then in 2024, we have 3 more people up for election. And it would be really favorable to do in one of these years, probably 2024, that year we make one of those board positions just up for 2 years. And so then, is that right? Yeah. So then in 2026, there'd be 2 people up for election instead of 1 person up for election. We felt it was too early. It was too soon to do it for this year's election because we didn't give anybody any notice that one of the terms might be a 2-year term. So I think it's best if we wait to 2024 to do this transition. Andrew, does that sound good to you?
Yeah, that was exactly as we discussed.
Okay.
That makes Sharon, I'm not sure I understand why putting it off to 2024, makes sense. Couldn't we, with this upcoming election, stipulate that one of the 3 is for 2 years and 2 of the 3 are for 3 years? Doesn't that solve the problem?
If we did it for this year, it would only be a 1-year term. So they'd be up for election again in 2023.
Well, I'll volunteer for the 1-year term.
No, I had a feeling you would say that.
That was unexpected.
Wow, yeah. Gee, that's out of left field.
So, I mean, that is, I don't know if we would have to go out with another notice that one's a 1-year term and the other 2 positions are for 3-year terms.
If one of the current directors wants to take that term.
I just threw my hat in the ring.
Right. I like that idea. Andrew, is that legal? Can we do this?
I hadn't even considered that. Lee, remind me, what's the status of the notices? Has anything gone out to the shareholders about the upcoming election at this point?
Yes, and it needs to be, resumes need to be back in by April 15th. So it went out last month. Or the beginning of this month.
And then there's a further notice to the shareholders right, about the names of the candidates when the ballots go out?
That goes out in May.
Yeah, I, Sharon, I think the board could take action to make one of the seats up in 2022 a one-year seat. And you could ask for the nominees to designate if they'd like to be considered for the one-year seat or the normal term seats. I think that's doable.
Well, can we do it like
our elections expert to weigh in as well, because she's run this election for so long.
Well, I looked before, but on the when you send out the ballots, you can say that the person that gets the most votes is 3 years, and the you're going to rank them 1, 2, 3, 4 anyway. So yeah. Number three or number two, whatever it is a one-year seat. Because that's that way the voters will decide who they want 1 year just by consensus.
May I ask, are all three of you running again? Dan?
Please?
Yeah, I plan to.
Bill?
I'm leaning toward it. The only outstanding issue is moving the board meetings to a weekday instead of the weekend. That's kind of what is in the back of my mind. That would be the only reason I wouldn't, because like right now I got my grandkids upstairs. Weekends are kind of – we have a Zoom call, right? So it's not like we have to go – if we didn't have Zoom and COVID and all that, then everybody used to go down and have lunch. So it made sense to have it on the Saturday. But now it seems like with Zoom we could I convinced the homeowners to move theirs to Thursday. So
yeah. So we can definitely discuss that. I think it's up for discussion. But Andy, are you also considering?
I'm considering. I haven't necessarily decided yet.
Okay. As like Jeff said at the beginning, we have no candidates running. So it would be basically the three of you running, the three of you definitely reelected. Which means no one loses.
I say let's just make it simpler and go with the plan that Sharon and Andy came up with to do it in 2024. I mean, they thought this through and they made a decision. I think we could talk about this forever, but let's just go with their plan. There's nothing wrong with their plan.
So make a motion, Dan, to vote on it.
I don't think it needs a motion, does it?
We don't need to vote on it. I just wanted to tell you what our current plan was.
Although Why do we not need to vote on it? I'm not sure I understand that part. Because you're making a change in a procedure that affects the board and the stockholders.
It's true, but we're not doing it this year. We're rolling it forward to a future election.
So then you're saying we'd make that decision. Yeah, your just discussion is we're not going to make a decision today.
Right. I think if we were going to change one of the terms to be a one-year term, that would be something we'd vote on today.
Yeah.
Right?
For the 2022 election, yeah, we'd need to take action today. But if we go under the plan that Sharon proposed that we had discussed before and make a change in 2024, there's no action today.
And I should note that people, you know, while you get elected for a three-year term, we have had people where, you know, they can't fulfill the term and they do leave after 2 years when they move to another part of the country and they've sold their home. So, you know, you're not.
That doesn't solve the problem though, Sharon, because yes. then you have, an open
seat
for a two-year tenure. Or one-year tenure.
Right.
Yeah, the problem we have now is we have 50% of the board roughly, potentially turning over, which is not a good thing.
Right.
But, you know, if Bill and Dan, commit to rerunning, I'll commit to rerunning.
I like that.
I'll commit to rerunning if you vote for me, Andy.
You have my vote, Bill.
We're sliding into electioneering here.
Oh. All right.
I'll do it if you do it.
Andrew, can I ask a question? What if on the ballot that goes out in May, if Andy still wants to run for 1 year, we put Andy Rich, incumbent, 1 year term.
I think we just do it. It's just easier just to put everybody on there.
Somebody's somebody wants have, to risk one year, we're going to have to do that. So we.
Can I know, but the decisions. Decision's been made to do it in 2024, whatever, Sharon and Andrew.
I agree. I think that's the cleaner approach. And as Sharon said, we have had people resign over time when they can't fulfill their term. And maybe that will happen before 2024 anyway. So this is one where we could kick it down the road and it's probably fine.
But the point is, Andrew, that doesn't solve the problem. If somebody
it doesn't solve the staggering, that's right.
So we have to figure out a way to have an election, whether it's this year or next year or the year after, that's for a 1 year board seat in order for the schedule to work out.
Sharon, I think we had figured out that 2024 it would be a 2 year seat. One person would run for a 2 year seat.
Yes.
Yeah, that was part of Andy. That was part of what fed into doing it 2024. That it's a little bit fairer to give somebody a 2 year seat, and that will get us back on track with the staggering. And if we have a lot of incumbents running again in 2022, then we're not going to have the board turnover issue.
Right.
Andrew, just for clarification, I do have to put this out for a vote to the shareholders, even though all incumbents are running and I have no new candidate.
That's correct. Well, you know what? Let me give that a little bit of thought. That was correct in the past, but we changed the bylaws. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Let me double check.
Okay. Thank you. That I appreciate.
Okay. Thank you. The next item is correspondence. Did we have our guest, Kathy?
No.
Okay. So I guess we still need to discuss this. They wanted us to read this at the board meeting if he's not able to attend.
Yeah, I can read it. And then you guys can decide. I don't think it's set. There's any action that he's requested other than to read it. So that I'm responding to your letter addressed to the shareholders dated January 2022. I request that my letter be read to the attendees of the next meeting if I'm not able to attend. I'm addressing the sentiment expressed in your quotation regarding the cost and billing of water. Part of the quote states, so whether you choose to only take one day's worth of water out of the tap or you live here full time, the cost of providing that service to you from our perspective is roughly the same. Even though the usage rate was increased by 15 cents per 100 cubic feet, it seems the message conveyed from the quotation in your letter is that billing is for usage is not important. That concept may have been made sense 20 years ago or even makes some sense in the middle of winter. On the other hand, it sends a message completely in conflict with letters from board signs, streets, etc., which go out every summer begging people to conserve water. It seems to violate the principal mandate from California to conserve water. Even from an economic standpoint, it doesn't make sense. When we buy water from Calaveras County Water District, does not our cost of water increase? Understandably, there is an inherent conflict of interest in full-time residents with regard to favoring flat village over usage billing. However, there is a mandate from the state to conserve and a real need to conserve. It's imperative that our board convey a balanced message with regard to conserving water. Nothing conveys that message more efficiently than equating water use with cost. Yours truly, and can you scroll up a little bit? My screen's small.
It's redacted. We redacted.
Oh, the person. Yeah. Okay, so I read it. Everybody has a right to an opinion. There's some areas I agree with and disagree with, but since there's no action, I'm not going to make any comment. So,
thank you, Bill. Do we have any other communications?
I do. I got a phone call from a shareholder, I think Thursday. He's had a lien on his account for quite a long time, and he was asking if we could reduce some of the interest and penalty fees on it. Sharon said that he came to the, or not Sharon, Lee said he came to the board like 5 years ago and asked for the same thing. And so we looked at his account, and he's not attempted to make any payments anytime before he came to the board 5 years ago and after. But I told him that I would present it to the board to see if we could eliminate some interest and penalty. But I already know what your answer is, but I just had to present it.
No way.
And we can't discuss this in open.
Yeah, we think. For items like this, I'd prefer that we schedule them for executive session next time, so we could get into the specifics if the board has specific questions.
Can we do that today, Andrew?
No. Yeah, since it wasn't agendized, I'd struggle with doing that today, unfortunately, because we do need to give notice to the shareholder that's going to happen before we go into executive session on it. I'm sorry. I think we should roll it over to the next.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
Okay.
So roll it over to the NESC and ask them to attend.
Yeah, they should be given an opportunity to attend and discuss the request.
Okay.
So I'll give you some specific instructions on getting it agendized offline.
Okay.
Thank you, Andrew and Kathy. Next is report on the monthly billing, invoices, and receivables.
So we billed out our first 2022 billing on February 25. That included the combined lots and the membership fees as well. And we have three liens that were paid since our last meeting as well.
Any questions? All right. Next is reportable items.
Okay, so in the reportables, the first one is the company policies. In the last meeting, the board asked us to provide a list or some sort of way to show them what policies we have in place, where they're located, and how we store them. So in this page and the next one, it regards every policy or plan, rules, regulation, bylaws, pretty much that I could find and dig up. So it shows where they're all located, which every single one is located in the office. Few of them are located on our website. And then like the emergency response plan, field operating procedures, and pump station operating procedure are located at the treatment plant. So yeah, every one of these policies or plans is available to any board member. It's just more of a list to let you know what we have available if you wanted to see it. Any questions or concerns about the policies and plans? Okay, so next we'll move on to document management. In the last meeting, the board had asked us to show how we manage all of our documents. So all of our documents and maps have a digital and a hard copy, which are all located in the office. The digital copies and the maps are saved across three different computers at the office. The three computers are backed up nightly to our cloud Carbonite, and are backed up quarterly to an external hard drive. The external hard drive is updated by me and is stored in my desk. The maps are all backed up to a separate external hard drive that was provided by MC Engineering. USDA project, maps, documents, drawings, pictures, pretty much anything involving that project are saved to the Google OneDrive that was provided by MC Engineering, and four separate thumb drives, which was also provided by MC Engineering. And all the hard copies from the USDA projects are stored at the office in about 15 or so 4-inch binders.
So, Tyler, do we have a fireproof safe or filing cabinet of any kind?
One.
The two drawer.
And the safe next door.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would suggest that all of those digital copies on thumb drives and, you know, the hard drive that you have in your desk be stored in a fireproof cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What's the rating on the cabinet? 2 hours?
No, I don't know. That cabinet has been with us since time immemorial. Is that how you say that? It's quite old, but I think it's still good. So I don't know the answer, Andy.
Do we have backups that I have are fairly small, being that they're just external hard drives and thumb drives. We could even purchase a smaller fireproof safe that I store somewhere over in one of the rooms here at the office.
Yeah, you might want to consider that.
I agree.
Do we have a safety deposit box anywhere?
Yeah, there's like 300 of them over in the bank.
Can I rent one? I mean, that's an option.
Okay, so we basically covered replace LRPC chair earlier, so I don't think we need to touch on that again. The next one is Edward Jones Savings Insured. You guys wanted to know the insurance amounts. Earlier, as Lee had said, the reserve account that we have with Edward Jones is FDIC insured up to $2.5 million. Everything that we have in the money market fund is within the stock market, so that's not insured under the FDIC. We do have Edward Jones is a member of the SIPC, which protects the securities of its members of up to $500,000. And that was sent to me by Sarah Oskey, our Edward Jones financial advisor. The last one is similar to the policy and plans list. This is a list of all of our people who work on our software or IT type stuff. So going through the providers, our person who is our IT at the office, the Black Mountain Software, the BDS, the Ambiquity, Aquasierra Controls. I mean, you guys can go through it and see. Each one of those has the access that it has is through TeamViewer or TurboMeet, which are both a one-time generated username and password every time that we go into them. So meaning that Black Mountain, if we need their help for them to get on our computer, we have to open TurboMeet, give them the randomly generated username and password, then they can come on our computer and do something. Beyond that, nobody has any type of access to our computers. When AC Barnes closed up shop at his Blastronics business here in Calaveras County, he had made sure that he put us onto a TeamViewer or TurboMeet type access for people, as well as he installed a multi-layer firewall at our office. Going into the next document, it's an email from AC basically explaining what he still does for us, because he does do it on the side now that he has closed his business.
Does anybody have any questions?
No.
That's it for all the reportables.
And I think that's it for our agenda.
So on this item, I hate to keep sticking my nose in the various things, but is there an audit service that can look at the various security measures and give us an opinion on whether they're state of the art and whether there are any risks involved? I hear, what you say, Tyler, and I'm not doubting that, we're secure, but it's sometimes best, as we have with our financials, to have a third-party expert take a look at the various, gadgets, whether it's the iPhones that you guys have or whether it's direct access via some, internet capability. We do have exposure, and I just don't understand enough of this well enough to, feel comfortable that, we're completely secure.
Well, researching all the Ambiquity, Aquasphere Controls, GoDaddy, Yealink, Black Mountain Software, they all have their security protocols on their privacy policies and on their websites that I had gone through. I'm 100% that they all say there is no 100% guarantee in the web. There's only the provisions that we can do, and there is never a 100% guarantee that somebody can't sneak in. But knowing that, everything that we have in the office, on our iPhones, in the document management system, it does not hold sensitive material. It holds public information as far as names and addresses, but there are no credit card information. There's nothing in there to say that it would be detrimental to the company or to somebody else if they were able to go in through a back door. But AC, our IT, has reassured us there is no back door to come in here.
Okay.
Using like Black Mountain Software, they have their own protections in place. It is a cloud-based software, so they have their own other protections. If you'd like to see those, Andy, I could email you over what I had pulled up and printed for each one of these companies.
No, that's fine. I wouldn't understand what I was looking at anyway.
It's like reading the privacy policy that everybody always just says. It was reading through some documents that was very dry, to say the least.
Okay. I think the last thing is to go over any action items. Do we have a list? Kathy or Lee?
Lee, can you do that, please?
Sure. Andrew is going to provide information on standing committees as opposed to our LRPC committee. From other clients, he's going to be working with the three board members who are currently on LRPC and Tom. We'll be asking Andrew to look over a letter that we write for a reminder to the highest usage users. Let's see, we have Tom is going to be working on a spreadsheet for the reserve funds. Tom is going to send the asset management plan and MC engineering information report to Dan. Tom is also going to be adding to the reserve fund a reference to the asset management plan. And I believe that's all I have to date.
So, Lee, I also put on my list that I'm going to do some quick research on Mutual Water Company enforcement for extreme water waste and report that back for some options on conservation. And then I'm going to check for you on whether ballots need to be sent out for an uncontested election if we end up that way. and it's probably going to be bad news. Sorry.
Okay, that's all right. Okay, so those two things from Andrew added onto action items.
Well, and you're also going to send to the Long Range Planning Committee, you know, what other water companies are doing in the way of managing their long range planning activities, et cetera, et cetera.
Their committees, the proposed committees.
I thought that was just the proposed committees.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I mentioned that. Andrew is going to provide the standing committees from other clients. Is that what you mean, Andy? And then he will be also, once he does that, he will send that information to Tom. Tom will get to the three board members on the LRPC and discuss that.
Yeah, got it. Thanks.
Okay, good.
Okay, great.
Is there anything else?
Sharon, this is Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Is there any thought or plan to go back to in-person meetings? Maybe either occasionally, maybe every other meeting? I'm not a big Zoom meeting person. I'm so much better in a room full of people. But
you know, that's a good topic of discussion. How do people feel? Want to go back to in-person or have every other meeting in person? I personally would like to see people in person. And as soon as my daughter leaves for college, I'm going to have a lot more free time to get up here. So maybe we can make like the July meeting an in-person meeting.
This is Jeff. I have live meetings.
Yeah. So if I heard Bill correctly, he would prefer a meeting during the week as opposed to Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And if it was during the week, I assume it would have to be evenings given everyone else's daytime schedules. So I don't know that in-person meetings necessarily work that well. Personally, I like Zoom, but, you know,
We can always go to the basic, like the hybrid meeting that we had tried before. We have the capability in the boardroom or in the other room here where we do our conferences that we have a camera, we have a TV set up to be able to do, or if somebody couldn't make it, that we could still have them on Zoom as well as have mostly everybody within the room.
So I think Bill was going to send out a survey to each person to see what, maybe Bill, you should suggest some dates that work for you or whatever day and time you think would be good and send those to the board, each person separately and get responses and see what might work.
Yeah, what we can do is send out a survey with, Monday through Friday, Tom, and then the Saturday, Tom, and just have everybody put down what their preference, and we can put Zoom in person or a combination. So that's what we'll do. And then we can talk about it at the next meeting. It's not something we have to decide today. So I think we would have to.
We have to vote on it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. We wouldn't make a decision. Yeah. So we'll have the data for the next meeting.
There's another action item.
In the past, we've made it, someone who's brought a proposal to the board, I'd like to move the meetings to the third Saturday of the month and every other month or something. So they've come to the board with a proposal. And so that's something to
consider. I mean, the survey will tell us whether or not, yeah. I mean, if it's like 50-50, then you're going to leave it on Saturday. If it's 90% want to have it on Tuesday, then you have something to change.
Right. I would be curious if people could do it. I don't know how many people are working, but who could do it like 3 to 5 on a Tuesday or something. So the employees are still working, you know, or something like that. I don't know. I don't know who works still. So that's just an idea.
Okay. So I will not be at the next meeting. I'd like to be in this discussion about future meetings, but I can be out of town in May. So
Well, yeah, Dan, we could do the survey, and then you'll have a copy of the survey results. It'll be kind of self-evident if there's – it'll be self-evidence from the data if there's a consensus one way or the other.
Okay.
I mean, if it's a split vote, then obviously you wouldn't – you know, you want to accommodate all the board members based on what we signed up for Saturday meetings on the, when we were elected.
Right. Well, thank you, everybody, for your time today. I think we need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you, John.
Do we not have an executive session?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Kathy, do we have an executive session? I think we have to agendize it. That's why we can't go into it.
Okay. So then, no, we don't.
All right, then I'll move. We adjourn then. I'm
second. Okay, thank you, Bill.
Aye.
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 All right, great meeting, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Yeah. Thanks for attending.
Everybody have a